This is Wikipedia Weekly, episode 89 for the week of October 3rd, 2011. The Italian Wikipedia Blackout. Hi, welcome to another episode of Wikipedia Weekly. I'm your host, Andrew Lee, also known as User Fuzz Hedo on the English Wikipedia.
I'm James Forrester, JD Forrester on English Wikipedia.
I'm Sarah Sturch, username Sarah Sturch, no space, on English Wikipedia.
I'm Pete Forsyth, username Pete Forsyth, no space, on English Wikipedia and many other projects.
So welcome to our Wikipedia Weekly Roundtable. It's been about a month, and we have a lot of stuff on our plate this week. So If you've been watching Wikipedia the news today, on Tuesday, October 4th, we've seen the blackout of the Italian Wikipedia. So if you try to visit it.wikipedia.org, you get this nice green message on the front page, which warns you about something specifically going on in Italian politics. So James, you've been watching this pretty carefully. Tell us what's going on with the front page of Wikipedia. It's not just the front page, the whole Italian Wikipedia is blocked out, right?
Yeah, it's pretty extreme. So what's happened is they've actually locked down the wiki, not just for editing, but actually for reading. There are no content. There is nothing except this letter. And in fact, they've done it with a combination of JavaScript and CSS so that, you know, no one can do it. And then they've put some hacks in so that you can't even edit even if you bypass all that stuff. You know, it's really serious. They called it going out on strike, and they really mean it. They're looking to strike for 48 hours and direct people's attention. And it's based on a piece of legislation that's been sitting around, as I understand it, in the Italian Parliament since 2008, but has finally been brought back by President Mussolini. That's unfortunate.
Oh, my.
Berlusconi. And he's looking to impose some very severe penalties on people who don't have who run internet sites, and this would include affecting them, but also, you know, every other piece of media. And there's a lot of disaffection amongst internet people in Italy because it's seen as incredibly obtrusive and unfair. So one of the things it would require is that if anybody ever objects as the subject of an article or a piece of news or whatever to something you publish, then you have to replace whatever text you put with the text they suggest in a box right there on the page forever, and right. You don't get any recourse, and you don't, it's not, you know, verified as true. It's just if the subject claims it, you must put it like that,
right? Mm. And the message that was on the front page is now translated into six languages. It's mainly in Italian, obviously, but I think this is the key paragraph translated into English. It says, this proposal, which the parliament is currently debating, provides a requirement to all websites to publish within 48 hours of the request and without any comment a correction of any content that the applicant deems detrimental to his or her image. And then later on it says, regardless of the truthfulness of the information deemed as offensive and its sources. Yikes.
Wow.
So not just to newspapers and to...
All of Berlusconi's girlfriends will have some fabulous Wikipedia articles. So
did they somehow get Ted Stevens back from the dead to write Italian law?
Oh, and my username is also Sarah Sturch on Italian Wikipedia. So.
Mm-hmm. So one of the interesting things is that they propose that anybody with the who is subject to Italian law and who has the technical ability to make these changes and refuses so to do is subject to a fine of 13,000 euros, which is like $14,000, which is, you know, for each infraction, which right. could be quite extreme. And so it would make essentially the entire point of Wikipedia void for the Italians.
Right. So certainly this has been a big point of debate within the Wikipedia community. And I think it actually took the Wikimedia Foundation folks in San Francisco a bit off guard, in that there was no real inkling of this beforehand, unless you were on the right mailing list. But I think even for Sue Gardner and a bunch of other folks, this was kind of like unexpected.
Yeah, so we got a kind of heads up from the Italian community about 24 hours ago saying, hey, there's a big push to go on strike, and by this we mean to lock out the wiki. And there was quite some discussion about, what do you mean lock out the wiki? We don't quite understand. And apparently this is in concert with other users, as I understand it, and other internet sites across Italy.
Oh, is that right? There are other...
Yeah, and so the timing is very urgent because you know, the law is getting voted on Friday. Mm. You know, so as we speak, you know, it's within 48 hours of getting decided one way or the other, and so that's why there's so much rush.
James, I wonder, have you been following that discussion at all on the Italian site? Because I have a question about...
Well, would that I had the ability to speak Italian, but unfortunately, right. I can just about manage in English. Anything beyond that is beyond me.
Well, I'm curious if there was any, and maybe we can only speculate about it in that case, but if there was any element in that discussion about the strategic plan that was released last year, which pretty clearly stated that that it was not part of the Wikimedia movement to take advocacy positions, which, I mean, I personally think that that was sort of not as fully considered as it might have been, and this is certainly not the only time that some sort of exception has come up, but I would say it's probably the most striking exception that we've seen.
Yeah, so the reaction inside the foundation, and I'm not going to betray confidences, I'm just talking about, you know, what's been posted online, you know, has been broadly positive, you know, but cautious. So talking about how this is, you know, clearly something that's very important and something we need to support and stand behind, but that possibly we should consider whether blocking out the entire wiki is fair and, you know, serves our wider mission in the longer term.
Yeah, I think what James said is captures it pretty well. There's a lot of people who are saying, you know, if we had to redo it and we had all the time to consider it, we probably wouldn't do it necessarily this way, but no one is ready to jump out of their seat saying this is a bad thing. And then just today, Jay Walsh put a blog post on there saying the Wikimedia Foundation stands with our volunteers in Italy who are challenging the recently drafted DDL Intercettazioni, or wiretapping bill, in Italy. And then goes on to say, like, well, Wikipedians the world over pride themselves in the ability to rapidly remove false information. Wikimedia Foundation supports the right. Actually, the foundation stance on this was a little bit stronger than I would have suspected. I don't know what you folks think, but I thought it would have been just, you know, Wikipedia is a community project. That community decided to do X. We'll stand by whatever the community wants. Instead, the foundation came up with something much stronger, saying that what the Italians did was much more, much aligned with what the foundation pushes. So I don't know.
Well, I think, you know, I think there's an interesting issue kind of wrapped up in that, mm-hmm. In the sense that the, you know, I think in a lot of cases, our community really does a very thorough job of deliberation. It may not always be perfect. It may have, you know, there may be major flaws in it, but I think it's something that the rest of the world that just reads Wikipedia content often doesn't get to see. And it's one of the very cool things about our project is that level of deliberation and how much we invite input into decisions like that, mm-hmm. And really try to make the right decision. And so I think there may be a temptation at the foundation to kind of shine a light on that fact that it's not something that was arbitrary, that it's not something that was made by, you know, some bored high school student that thought it would be fun to disrupt, you know, an entire country's Wikipedia, but, or language's Wikipedia, but that it's actually, you know, even if it's a questionable decision, it was a serious decision.
Yeah, and from the chatter on the mailing list, it seems like it was pretty strong, if not complete consensus, but very strong consensus on the Italian side. And there's no one really chiming up from the Italian side saying, you know, my voice wasn't heard, what they're doing is out of order, right?
Well, I think this afternoon on OTRS, it's been kind of interesting. You know, that's our customer service volunteer program. And, you know, we've been getting people who are Swiss writing in saying, this is not right. Why do we have to pay for what the Italian government has chosen to decide? You know, and we laugh at it, kind of going, well, you drama queens. I mean, I think it's a serious concern from the Italian people, Italian-speaking people who don't live in Italy, to kind of go, well, all right, I'm just a reader. Mm-hmm. I'm writing to the Wikimedia Foundation just to voice my opinion because I just want to read an article about a football game and I can't, and this really sucks because of a decision the Italian government made, and now a bunch of Italian editors have decided to shut down Wikipedia for a day.
Right.
And there's been a number of those, and I think it's something that it might not be a majority voice or the loudest voice, but it's been kind of...
But, you know, I think just in, you know, to sort of take the position that I would imagine... you know, the Italians might my take to that is that they've got a serious issue on their hands. They've got something being considered in Parliament that might make Wikipedia essentially impossible in their entire country. And it may very well be that to them, the fact that they've attracted the attention of people in Switzerland is a net gain. You know, I'm
right.
Well, and also it makes me question, and this is something I've brought up online earlier this afternoon, is that, you know, I think there's a lot of problems with documentation and with awareness. And obviously the Swiss people, these three Swiss people that I've been dealing with this afternoon, were oblivious about what was going on in Italy, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who's to blame for that, if anybody is, but it's great that it's getting to them. But at the same time, where do we have to draw the line at shutting off our communication and shutting down our mission to make a political statement? Right. I'm just being the devil's advocate here. So,
well, and you do have to wonder, I think, with how prominent Wikipedia is these days, is it even really possible for us to anticipate what is the effect of having Wikipedia offline for a substantial period of time? Like,
happened.
Does it threaten lives? Like, I don't know. I can't really imagine a scenario where it does.
I certainly know that there's, you know, lots of anecdotal stories of doctors using Wikipedia, you know, and much as we shudder and worry about that kind of thing, you know, if that does
it's not
have
something
a,
to be taken lightly.
No, it's not. I mean, there's someone in my life who has a certain kind of cancer, and they said Wikipedia was the best website for it next to going to my doctor. I mean, that's pretty crazy. And I'm not saying that's a life and changing experience, but all it takes is some kid who gets in a, you know, a whatever, slippery slope kind of theories. But imagine if this happened in English Wikipedia for 48 hours.
Yeah, I mean, and basically, you're disrupting the lives of students, especially this whole week, right?
Well, and that's one thing I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No. go ahead. I mean, basically, it's like, imagine all, we're so dependent on Wikipedia these days, not just in our personal lives, professional lives.
Yeah, as someone involved in glam outreach, in this gender gap outreach, and who at least pays attention to what's going on at the Campus Ambassador Program, imagine for 2 days if Wikipedia was stripped off the internet in a way.
Right.
You know, it just makes you question, how can we take it for, you know, how do we take Wikipedia for granted? Right. And this is one of those moments where people are starting to do that. And I think it's a really powerful moment. So.
And James, you and I are kind of the oldest folks on this podcast, at least. There's never really anything been like this ever in the history of Wikipedia in terms of the community like trying to make a statement like this, right?
Yeah, so we've been kind of racking our brains. So we've, as you know, in all best situations when there's something controversial, there's a meta page about, you know, is this a good thing, which I'm sure we'll put a link in with the podcast. It's an interesting question as to, you know, other steps that we've done before. I believe some of the Indic languages have done this in some circumstances, although I don't know the details. But of course, you know, kind of high-level action to disrupt other things. We put in a frame breakout piece into the JavaScript and CSS for English Wikipedia a few years ago to deliberately break someone's embedding of our content. You know, and that's not quite the same thing because it's about, but it did, you know, seriously break a quite major use of our content. And we did it because we, you know, felt that it was absolutely necessary.
Right. There were some people on the list arguing that this Italian law that was being proposed was so laughably ridiculous in what it was asking for that the Italian community shouldn't have overreacted like this. But you know, people who've observed what happens in Italy knows that well, you know, crazy things can happen in Italy, and
crazy things get through any legislative body.
Right,
you know,
it's pretty serious stuff.
I'd be nervous if something like that was being considered by our Congress.
Absolutely. I get nervous every year Disney and Picasso come up, you know.
Exactly.
It's copyright.
Well, the interesting thing is that, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, could you have made a similar point without completely blacking out Wikipedia? What if you made, like, the top of each page is this really gigantic header that warned everyone on every page? I think people would still get the idea. Mm-hmm.
And still have access to the content.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, far be it from me to suggest that where we want to go to is somewhere where there's kind of an endless running campaign or, you know, push to move against, you know, laws that we find objectionable. But, you know, we probably will come out of this stronger with some kind of particular agreed objectives around what we want in terms of legislative lobbying and so on and so forth. But also the ways in which we think it's appropriate to use, you know, the bully pulpit that we have,
right,
frankly, as number five website in the world or whatever, to affect those outcomes.
Well, I don't think you'd find a resounding consensus on very many issues. You know, I think that it's, I think in a set, like Wikipedia is something like Wikipedians by the nature of what they do together have a very unique perspective, like vantage point for how the internet functions and the kinds of effects that it might have when the environment it functions within changes. And I think there is a level where there's sort of a duty to stand up and, you know, not necessarily to do it in this way, but to stand up and shout from the rooftops when something is going to happen that you have the future vision to see how it would affect what you're doing for the world and your readers might not.
Well, you just gave a perfect segue into our next topic, which is, you know, when does the, you know, overwhelming consensus of the community matter? And the month of September.
Are you saying I stepped in it?
No, I'm saying you gracefully segued into our next topic, which is basically a piece of you reading The Signpost going back to early September about the fact that there was a – well, actually, no, I'm sorry, later in September. But that there was a consensus on English language Wikipedia about this trial auto-confirmation issue, which basically – there was seemed to be widespread consensus in English Wikipedia that this proposal for barring non-auto-confirmed editors, that's double negative, from creating articles was voted on, and yeah. You know, the community wanted one thing.
And let's just explain auto-confirmed, because that's a little
dark. But the headline is the foundation, as the folks who had to kind of sign off on the technical implementation of it decided not to go with the consensus, which was kind of a first as well in terms of the foundation seeing the community consensus and saying, no, we're not going to do that. Right. So you folks can probably explain it better because you probably tracked it closer. There's a lot of comments on this. But basically, an auto-confirmed user is someone who is an account that's at least 4 days old and has 10 edits. I think that's what the bar is now. And the idea is that you have this concept of auto-confirmed user, so you don't have lots of vandalism or spam from people registering an account right away and then, you know, doing massive editing on articles or massive creation of articles. So that was the issue here, is that do you allow non-auto-confirmed editors to create articles in Wikipedia?
To create new articles.
Right, to create new articles, right. And what was the result of this? This whole consensus was that the community wanted this to be turned on. Is that right? I think that's what it was.
I believe the community, I believe the premise is that sort of more harm in terms of vandalism and confusion comes of people with, you know, essentially no Wikipedia experience creating new articles than good articles come from it. And that was sort of past the threshold where it made sense to require people to have a little bit of experience before they could create a new article. And my understanding is that the foundation basically refused to put its technical resources into implementing that, which really might be cast as the sort of thing that happens to all kinds of projects all the time. This one is English language Wikipedia is the biggest one, so it's a big deal. But, you know, Wikisource has very reasonable requests with, you know, very extensive consensus that nobody would ever think is a bad idea, but it doesn't necessarily get implemented because tech resources are finite.
Well, and I also think it has a lot to do with inclusiveness. And as someone who tracks, you know, new user edits and does outreach and is struggling to figure out why we can't retain people, if you want to call me struggling with it, I'm figuring it out. But it's I think it goes against this. I know people say it's frustrating because we have to clean up people's messes. We have to deal with it and, oh, you know, vandalizing things and... Mm-hmm. I think a lot of this has to do with people being lazy and using bots and technology to analyze and control things. But maybe this is not the place for me to stand on a soapbox.
But it is sometimes. I mean, you know, I think that the foundation is trying to move more in a direction, and you know, the community to a large degree is really trying to move more in a direction of using science to inform decisions like this, to not just sort of go on a gut feeling that maybe this would have the right kind of effects on our project, but, you know, actually wanting to base it on some research that you really have confidence that the benefits are going to outweigh the the negatives, and that, you know, that sometimes comes into conflict with community consensus, which,
and it generally often seems to. I mean, especially when we move on to our next topic. But it's when I was at the foundation last month in September, some summer of research fellows gave their presentations, and I mean, it's all science, it's all research, it's all data-based, data-based space, and it makes sense to me just to see the foundation respond this way based on our focus on technology. And I don't mean to say that because, I mean, we are technology-based, but they've noticed a lot of problems that have formulated around us focusing on using science, these bots and automated wizards to create articles and all of this stuff. We're taking the human out of the process, and it's
I think you're thinking of science in a different way than I meant.
Okay.
In that case. Sorry. I meant science as in, you know, some sort of structured peer-reviewed research that would indicate that making this kind of change will have the desired kinds of effects.
Opposed
to a bunch of Wikipedians managed to convince one another that it probably will have this kind of change. Very different kinds of standards.
Yeah, and you know, the foundation is spending an awful lot of money trying to make things better for new users, and you know, that's donors' money we have, like, you know, legal responsibilities for. And you know, if we let it all get kind of thrown away, and you know, after spending so much money and so much effort and time trying to make it good by essentially, you know, screwing over, forgive my language, but screwing over new users, then it's not really an appropriate expenditure. But mm-hmm. I'm actually at the foundation this week, and I was, you know, as part of singing for my supper, I gave a brown bag lunch to the staff, especially the new staff, talking about how the community has developed over the 9 years that I've been a Wikimedian. And, you know, especially focusing on decisions where the foundation, the cabal, the developers, whatever, said this is how it's going to be. You know, often in the absence of decisions from the community or consensus, and, you know, in many cases, actually, in direct contrast, you know, direct conflict with what the community wanted. And they've many of them have actually turned out very successfully. So, you know, the most obvious examples I gave were templates, categories. Mm. These were created by the developers because the developers thought it would be a good idea. There was no consensus. There was no discussion with users at the time,
right.
You know, and then suddenly they turned into huge things and are absolutely critical right now. But, you know, 8 years ago, users were like, what the hell? You're just creating this functionality. We don't want it. What if people abuse it? We now have to change how we do things, and you're just screwing us over. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know,
well, and you have the...
is actually a success.
Yeah. Well, but more recently also, I mean, you have the Rate This article, I think, is a pretty obvious example of something like that, where, you know, the foundation basically decided that it was important enough that we get feedback on articles that it was worth putting, you know, a big piece of real estate on every single article.
Oh, Wikilove's another example too.
Yeah, Wikilove too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but we've definitely hit two interesting inflection points in the history of Wikipedia in the same month, which is the Italian move and also the non-auto-confirmed users and the tension that's there between the foundation in terms of who's going to implement it and the will of the community. And I don't know what it means in the long term, but it's definitely an interesting set of events that have happened. So we'll have to see.
And it's interesting to see where there's the one where there's a, you know, in the Italian case where, you know, the foundation heard about it maybe 24 hours before it was implemented and, you know, basically chose to support that, to not like step in and oppose their community. And in the other case, in the English language, you know, did apparently choose to go in a completely different direction. And, you know, I think there are some interesting questions about how closely connected the foundation is with the English language Wikipedia versus other languages. I think it's always going to be a tricky road, a tricky balancing act for the foundation where they choose to intervene.
I think you've seen it, especially if we've seen it with the image filter referendum, with Germans versus English versus this versus that. It's been a very heated thing about our, you know, our community. The German community in Wikipedia has supported the image is against the image filter. And it's been really intense conversations about that.
Right, which goes to our next topic, of course, which is, all of September. This is a September 5th signpost, and their headline, I think, sums it up best. 24,000 votes later, and the community position on image filter still unclear. Yes, so basically 24,000 votes were cast, 7,000 of them with comments, which are still being analyzed, a referendum on whether to... implement a opt-in image filter system so that as a user you could say I want images of this type or don't want to see images of that type. And I think this is the most interesting result. The most general question of this referendum had a median result of 6 on a scale of 0 to 10 where 5 was neutral. Therefore, there's no strong feeling kind of one way or the other on this, which probably frustrated the hell out of everyone because there's so much... text filled on this with nothing to show for it in the end except deadlock. Did you folks follow this or what was your opinion?
I've been in Foundation L. You want to get a mouthful? It's been my ears are too small for earbuds.
I can't believe you followed this whole thing, Sarah. So tell us kind of.
Well, I don't know anything.
What compelled you to follow this thing?
I just followed it just to be a shit stirrer, as they call me. No, there's been a lot of. Oh, I'm probably the worst person to explain all of this, but it's especially on Foundation L, as we all know, is often a very passionate group of people, a very vocal group of people. A lot of it comes down to is the foundation wanting to censor Wikipedia? And again, I'm not the perfect person to explain all of this because it has to do with IP
control. Well, I think I can give sort of a background of what the issues at stake are. I think you can speak a lot better to me to what people are talking about.
Yeah.
But just to maybe kind of start it off.
Yeah.
It started with a board resolution, which came out of there being a lot of concern. Due to some items in the news, I don't know, 6-8 months ago, maybe more like a year ago, about pornography on Wikipedia and on Wikimedia Commons, about images that are particularly offensive and whether or not they should be there. So there was a lot of discussion about different things that could be done, and the Wikimedia Board of Directors issued a resolution that they wanted. This option to be explored, the ability for an individual user to opt out. It's something that's been discussed in the past, for many times. And as I understand it, the strongest, most principled objection to this is the concern that once the technology exists, that it will enable companies, internet service providers, entire countries to enforce it on behalf, without a user's buy-in, to make it the case for an entire country or an entire internet service provider's customer base. I really am not a person who can assess on a technical level whether that's true. I mean, it seems to me that if it's something that's in your user preferences and you can go and check or uncheck it, that doesn't seem to me like the kind of thing that is accessible to a service provider to change, but I could be completely wrong. I'm really not a techie.
I think the issue there, which it depends a lot on the implementation, and James, feel free to jump in too, because you and I are kind of techie on this, but if you put the mechanisms in Wikipedia, whether it's through categories, tagging, or some type of system that
it's a tagging system. Yeah.
Right, a tagging system, which allows for user opt-in. In theory, a system that is that generic could be used by an ISP or a foreign government to basically say, hey, all users, regardless of whether you're logged in or not, we're going to filter for you. And we're gonna
it's the act of identifying the specific images that would be subject to this control or not.
Yeah,
it's not so much the checkbox and the preferences.
Right. Once you've created the mechanisms to tag stuff that is of a certain type, then... It's open to all kinds of creative and wonderful uses, but also abusive and not so desirable uses. So
sure, but to spin it the other way, you go from a situation where an ISP or a government or a nation or whatever feels the need that it has to block the entire site entirely to one where they feel like they have enough control to filter it down and only allow access to a set of clean categories or whatever.
Well, that's where we bring up the Muhammad idea, you know, the whole concept of banning these images or the drawing or the cartoon of Muhammad. You know, there's entire countries that are driven around, you know, the law of Islam, and that's just one example, you know. I don't know.
Right. But I think there's an important sort of philosophical question here that I don't see coming up too much, and it's a delicate one, but you know, I think assume good faith is a very is one of the five pillars. You know, the idea that that other people are, you know, trying to do good things is a central value in our community. And much as it's easy to imagine scary scenarios, it also I find it a little concerning to drive a decision out of fear that another organization is going to act in bad faith. I think it's, we don't often hear about things like assume good faith in reference to our readers or in reference to organizations that we interact with, mm-hmm. but I think it's still an important value there as well.
It is, though AGF is mostly a community thing of among editors, not necessarily your random government institution or outsider. Right.
You know, but it's not being, it's, you don't see, like, again, with the Foundation L conversations, you're not seeing that brought up. People aren't saying, assume good faith. Can't we all just get along with this? It's called, you're a censor if you support this sometimes. It's called, you're a prude. And people will say they haven't called people that, but I don't know, I've been one.
I think the issue with that line of argument is that it's, you know, it's by creating a technical feature, one is not a censor, right? If someone else chooses to come along and censor, that's their moral responsibility. And it may be that they do it, and it may be that that has bad effects. But I think that, you know, it concerns me a little bit when I see our community sort of trying to take on perspectives that are maybe more appropriate to government than to building an encyclopedia.
Well, right? it's been slippery slope paranoia. I call paranoia, you know, for these people.
Right,
and they're the vocal minority, and they hate to hear that. They're going to kill me for saying that. But and then it becomes this whole, well, the German community, who's the second largest Wikipedia, has voted against this. So
overwhelming ways, right?
Yes, and we've, you know, asked, well, what about gender? Well, the women support it too. The majority of women, and they posted the vulva article on the front page of Wikipedia for German Wikipedia, and they asked people, are you cool with this article with a vulva? Right there on the front page, and most people said yes. When in English Wikipedia, there might be a different, it might be a little different response. And there's been a big heated conversation about shock value, about how people respond, and who are we as the English Wikipedia to dare say this is what needs to be executed.
Isn't there also sort of a question in here about how, you know, how does, there are a lot of different things that could be done to address issues of gender or issues of you know, people being offended by certain kinds of content in the Wikimedia world, and is it really the proper role of the board to be making narrow decisions like that? You know, I think it would be nice to have the board maybe more in a position of convening discussion, of creating space and sort of, you know, expressing values and making it possible to make decisions like that on a sort of more community-driven basis.
Well, I think – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, my little bit is basically I think I'm glad that the board has stayed out of it at this point. I mean, basically
but the entire thing came from a board resolution.
But
the board made this decision in May, wasn't it?
But
the board said there shall be such a thing. And this, you know, consultation exercise gave people a sense of entitlement that they get to decide whether or not it happens. But the board has already made its decision.
But it's a matter of it's a matter of mechanism versus policy, right? Mm-hmm. So the board has wisely decided not to overstep its bounds and basically say, you know, you guys should determine whether you want the mechanism in there. The policy should be a community thing, right?
Well, and I think a lot of this comes down to exploring just what Pete said about having an environment, a welcome environment, a civil environment, God forbid, that you know, allows for this conversation to take place. Because I think a lot of these things can be rectified by logical thinking, by, you know, God forbid, policy change,
right.
Another scary thing. but just really thinking about how do we develop these articles that have these controversial images, whether it's violent or sexual or, you know, medical, and who do religious. We need to bring in to kind of say, hey, or religious, you know, hey, religious person, hey, medical doctor, hey, how can we make this the most educational and valuable resource for people who are looking for this information without freaking the hell out of people when they log onto the website, or so they can look at the pregnancy article when they're at work with a naked lady as the first thing you see.
Right. I mean, my intuition tells me that, you know, in the early days, Wikipedia was heavily dominated by slash daughters, internet libertarians, the types of folks who were, you know, very much in the Richard Stallman.
All banned now.
Yeah, exactly. but you, in the last 5-7 years, you have a whole other set of folks join who have, you know, a different type of profile. And if I were a betting man, I would bet that, you know, there's basically, if you look at the graph of who voted 0 to 10 on this thing, there's basically two big spikes: one at 0 and one at 10. So basically, it's a very polarized community here. And my, as a betting man, the people who bet 0, which is basically that we should not consider image filtering whatsoever and under any circumstances, these are your classic kind of male, young, single, no yes. kids kind of folks who are, I don't want to call them sociopaths, but they're not thinking about the whole
picture. Wow. And not to rescue
your reputation. I support what you just said, Andrew.
But
I support
we
that.
We need those people. But I used to be one of those guys. I have two kids now.
You were
a sociopath? I used to be one of those guys.
You're
I was
a great
the
doctor.
Idealistic.
But, good
you know,
meds.
And then the people at the 10 spike are the ones who are like, you know what? I've got 2-year-olds now, and they're going to be on Wikipedia soon, and do I want
or them? Or I'm a professor. I'm a teacher. I'm the person who's professional who wants to respect and love Wikipedia. It's a total different, just like you said, it's the old school computer geeks who are BBSers. Well, I was one of them versus a dirty liberals. I don't know. It's
right.
That,
I mean,
that's a whole new, that could be a whole WikiSim presentation in itself, Pete.
I think we need to be kind of cautious on this. I mean, where this seems, you know, kind of to be going. I know we're having a little fun
with
it.
No, we're not being civil. But, we love everyone.
Well, no, I mean, let's just recall that, you know, just on the, I believe it was on the gender gap mailing list recently, I'm remembering a specific message from a woman in Germany who gave a very calm, very, you know, well reasoned, just sort of a perspective of why it seems like it would be a bad idea from a German perspective. I mean, I think there may be, you know, some sort of easily mockable people who take that position out there, but there are also very thoughtful, good faith people who take the same position. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, it's important to keep that in mind.
And I also think it shows that maybe languages should have their own rights as their own individual Wikipedias in this regard. I mean, look what Italy did today. Why can't Germany? Why does Germany need an? Why does Germany need the image, you know, filter? And maybe the English want it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the article I always kind of see as the litmus test for this is the ejaculation article. That was, you know. I don't know about
Sarah. You got any folks? Any examples?
No, but this is
darling,
been the article that has been the touching a nerve of folks. And there was always these edit wars about whether you should have an animated GIF above the fold, like the first image you
soggy
see
biscuit,
right? Was of a actual guy ejaculating and having white stuff shoot out, and everything. It was just like disturbing. And but it was like accurate. It's factual. It's useful. But is that what we should be showing folks? And you could never get consensus on that because you had two different sides to this whole thing.
My example currently, and some people don't like me to use it, is vagina versus penis. Okay, mm-hmm. Go on Wikipedia, search vagina, you get a lady's vagina. You get it right there in your face, explaining what every part is.
Oh.
I know, I have female parts. If you search penis, you get a collection of penises in jars, I'm presuming formaldehyde,
really?
And historical image.
Of various species,
and
yeah.
Then you have to go to a a little link that says, oh, if you're looking for a human penis, you have to go here, and then there's your penis.
Right.
Human penis. Now, to me, that makes no sense. Why do I have to put in vagina and then get a vagina with a lady, a woman, a human, pardon me, human vagina?
Right.
And then if I put in penis, I get a jar, a bunch of penises in jars and a horse cock. Right. Versus a human penis.
Right.
To me, that makes no sense. And I can use lamer examples. Why do I have to log on to Shorts, the Shorts article, and see a woman, a really voyeuristic image of a woman's butt in booty shorts, which I changed to a cute picture of the Eisenhowers in shorts fishing
right, I saw.
The 1960s. you know, why does this, what, damn microphone, why does that have to be the way that we roll? I guess that's just what I don't understand. I'm all about having a vagina and the penis there to explain what they are, but why do I have to go to animal penis?
For whatever reason, I mean, this is a fascinating cultural study. There has been this strain in Wikipedia since the beginning, since I was part of the beginning, of people like, you know, say, how far can we go with that picture we put at the top of the article?
And that's early old school thinking. Let's push it to the limits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
There's just this, you know, I think as we really saw most clearly highlighted with the Wikipedia 10 celebrations, like Wikipedia has really reached a point. I mean, it's arguably the single most valuable information resource on the planet. You know, it's the number one web hit for pretty much everything. And then there's sort of a level of responsibility that wasn't really there when you were imagining that it might be something like that someday.
No.
No.
James, you haven't weighed in on the ejaculation, penis, and vagina articles. So what is your...
Well, so we've had, you know, this conversation going on for a really long time. I remember when the article on autofellatio was like the number one. And I remember that being, I think, the really first major cross-wiki discussion about how... our kind of expectations and the way that we treated our users possibly didn't kind of match up with what other people's expectations were.
Right.
But, you know, more broadly, I think it would have been helpful had we come to the decision that either we filter ourselves, but we filter it in a different product, like, you know, there's, you know, wikisafe.org or whatever, I don't know, or that we, you know, have a consistent set of standards that everyone signs up to and we live with them. And I think a consistent set of standards is going to be quite hard to achieve because, you know, what's okay in London probably isn't okay in other bits of the UK, let alone if you, you know, want to find something that Saudi will be just as happy with as Luxembourg. But I fear if we don't, you know, come up with a proper solution, then we're just going to end up, you know, with a community that's, you know, endlessly divided on this and no one's happy. And ultimately, you know, we're here to serve our readers. And if our readers aren't served by what we currently do, and they really clearly aren't in many ways, then we're failing in our primary duty.
And that's just what I think one of the biggest problems is. People aren't, you know, no matter how selfish I can be about what I think Wikipedia should be, In the end, it's all about how are we serving our readers.
Right.
And sure, it's very awesome to know I can write an article and people are going to read it and yay, but I'm writing it to share it with the world. And if our public is reacting in this way of scratching their heads and going, well, I can't even look at this at my library at a presentation, because if I pull up the front page of Commons, there's a nudie picture up there of an anime cartoon,
right.
And we all know how much I love that topic. There's something wrong, and it's just, it's going to take a long time for us, I think, to figure it out if we ever do, but I really hope we can figure it out, because it'd be really awesome if we can, and all my heart rate will go down. I'll stop drinking as much, so come on, people, let's get this.
Yeah. All right, good. Well, I'm glad we came to a nice resolution of sorts on that one.
We did it. What about them?
I know. Why can't we all get along? So let's see. That next one, we actually are lucky that we have Pete, who went to Wikisim. Wikisim used to be co-located with Wikimania. This year it was not. It was held at different dates and different locations, but this year it was just last week, I guess, or this past week, right? And Wikisim was in Silicon Valley?
That's right. It was. It's at Microsoft's campus in Mountain View, Microsoft Research. And it's actually still underway. There's still one more day. It was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. So it's, let's see, what are some of the highlights? The top papers were both on the gender gap in Wikipedia, and I think Sarah's more familiar with that than me.
Yeah, real quick, the two best paper winners for Wikisim, and unfortunately I was not able to attend, and I'm always looking for funding as a poor grad student, for future note for our listeners, were the Wikipedia Clubhouse, an exploration of Wikipedia's gender imbalance, which was written by a group of folks from the University of Minneapolis, I believe, And the short paper was Gender Differences in Wikipedia Editing. It's pretty powerful, I think, when the two best papers for Wikisim were about gender imbalance and the gender gap. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of says what the focus is going to be for the next year when it comes to the Wikimedia Foundation and my own research, and yay. Yeah. But I know Pete wasn't able to see those talks, but I have a couple of links up online, and if you go to wikisim.org, you can link to them pretty easily. So,
And there was actually there was a good comment on that by I believe it was Andrea Forte, who's one of the organizers of the conference, who underscored early on that it really was not a statement by Wikisim or anything like that. These are simply the papers that the reviewers of the submissions happened to find the most compelling of the papers that were submitted. And so I think that's in a way that's kind of cooler, right? That that this thing that we know is a big issue in our world, that the people that the academics out there doing peer reviews of this sort of thing are also compelled by those issues.
Well, I think it's really interesting.
It makes me feel like we have allies out there in important places.
Absolutely. And now we just need them to write articles in Wikipedia. But it says a lot that the academic community was looking at this before we were, in a way. You know, it was kind of haunting. I mean, we'll do this on a whole other podcast. I'm sure we could do a whole gender gap week. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's really powerful when I saw that Wikisim chose these two papers. I have a scoop it, scoop.it, we'll link to it, about the gender gap. And when I saw that these two papers were chosen, it kind of slightly, it blew my mind a little bit that this just says that people are aware whether it's that this is happening in Wiki world across not just Wikipedia and Wikimedia projects, but there's a gender gap in this world of open source technology, and we've got to fix it.
Well, and it's great because this is probably the most transparent community with the biggest data set to analyze, right? If you look at like Linux and other kind of communities, that's all kind of distributed and all the data is hidden, but this is all on Wiki. I was just going to read some of the numbers from this. In the signpost summary, it said the I guess this is the best full paper, had sampled 256,000 users who created a new account on English Wikipedia between September 2010 and February 2011 and coded their contribution by category of work. The results suggest that whereas in the lower three quartiles by activity level, men and women make roughly the same contributions in each category of wiki work, so the lower 75%. In the top quartile, editors behave in a significantly different way. The researchers found that among the top 25% of Wikipedians by activity level, 27% were made by women, or only 27% of the revisions were made by women. Women tend to make larger revisions than men. I don't know what that means, Sarah.
You can write a whole article versus I'd rather rewrite entire articles.
Interesting.
And then I dump them on the new on
so
the
not little. You don't take little nibbles; you take a gigantic bite. Then you just
we're control freaks. No, I'm not generalizing. Right. No, but it's. I think that's what when they say larger revisions. I think they mean we take larger chunks out. We rewrite those chunks and we deposit them.
Right. Interesting. And then top female editors make significantly larger revisions than men in at least two categories: adding new content and rephrasing existing text.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that rephrasing existing text is really powerful, I think, because that just shows you that they often say, oh, well, women contributing to Wikipedia bring a different voice, even though we need neutrality.
Right.
I think that just shows that women are making things more neutral by bringing both the voices in together, or any of the voices, depending on what you identify as. It's a pretty powerful thing. And that Clubhouse reference goes back to the book, Unlocking the Clubhouse, Women in Computing. So,
very cool.
Yeah, and what I'm doing, I've done a survey about it. I'll have it wrapped up at the end of the month. I hope to present it, hopefully, out in San Francisco at the foundation that I'm doing.
Right here as well, right?
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. I've got I think we're almost at 300 women have replied, and a lot of it's asking for your opinion, their opinions, not just click here and choose this. It's tell me what you think and how you're feeling and how you've been treated and what you want to see happen. And the responses have been, some of the things actually match up so far with the statistics we've seen in the Clubhouse article and the Wikimedia Foundation's own editor survey, and then some of the things don't. So it's going to be, I think, a powerful little tool to see how we can maybe move along here to close the gender gap.
Right.
Really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So, Pete, what did you see at Wikisim?
Yeah, what else did you see?
Yeah. So
were there a lot of women there?
there are a number of women. You know, the thing that's that was most fascinating to me is it sure seems to me like there are about twice as many Europeans as there are Americans here in at this conference in Northern California.
Wow.
There are certainly a number of women. There are a few things I would like to hit on. One is the one of the main sponsors of Wikisim this year is Creative Commons, and their recently appointed hired CEO Kathy Casserly, who comes from an education background, specifically exploring the use of open licenses in educational resources. Mm-hmm. She gave the opening keynote and really, I think, set the tone for the conference with her focus on education. And I wanted to bring this up because I feel like there's something that may not be on the radar of a lot of Wikipedians, which is that with Creative Commons really in the last 6 months or so taking a stronger and stronger interest in education and in Wikipedia as being two of the areas where the value of free licenses is really the most apparent. I think there's a really huge opportunity there to kind of leverage off that and make allies out of people in the world of education. I think Creative Commons has really wisely taken note of the really tremendous things that are happening with their licenses in that world. Not to say that there aren't things in plenty of other areas. People are releasing music under Creative Commons licenses and, news reporting. And I mean, there are 1,000 examples. But I really think that within education and Wikipedia, where you have lots of opportunity for not only sharing, but collaboration and remixing and republishing content in different forms, I think that's really the most revolutionary thing about free licenses, is something where there are a lot of success stories that haven't been written yet. Another thing, Ward Cunningham, who is the legend, yeah, maybe needs no introduction, but is the inventor of Wiki software about, I think over 15 years ago now. So he invented the concept of having really easy to edit web pages that that multiple people could change without necessarily having to log in. So Ward is he's now working. He's under contract at Nike, the athletic company, in their research division, and he's working on something really interesting that he showed off, which is. It's essentially a way of developing websites so that elements of stories can be dragged around from one website to another. So you might have web pages if web pages on like a news site and maybe a Wikipedia page and several different sites are tagged as Creative Commons, so they invite sharing and remixing. You can load several narrow pages into one browser window and literally drag a paragraph or an image or a piece of data from one story to another. And behind the scenes, it's tracking what went to where, what article was the source, and it's keeping track of it being freely licensed. So it's interesting to see what he's working on, and I think the thing he's really he commented about inspiring this is the ability of JavaScript in browsers these days, that it's much faster and more consistent between browsers, that it enables kind of radical stuff to happen that we couldn't have even really imagined trying to do a few years ago. He talked about dragging large images over and expecting it to break and crash the browser, and it just worked.
Cool.
So I think we'll be seeing some cool stuff coming out of that.
Yeah. It might be great for a visual editor.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it might be a long time before we see it in Wikipedia itself, but you
it's
know.
A cool idea, though. Wow.
Yeah, that's really cool. Oh, we're re-adding James. James, are you around?
I am now, yes. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I
didn't even notice you dropped there. that's cool. So he's a Nike fellow, I guess it's called, right?
Yeah, that's right. Nike. Yep. And he and wow, you know, it's interesting cool. what is inspired, like what Nike's interest is in this. And it you know, essentially they're I think this may be one of many motivations, I'm not sure, but in their role as a manufacturer, they're looking at ways in which they can be a leader in their industry in tracking metrics about energy efficiency and any number of sort of corporate responsibility issues in their plants and in their production processes, and publishing them in a way that opens them up to critical review and invites their competitors and other companies to adopt similar practices, so that there's sort of a standard of how that kind of data is handled, and makes it possible to have like friendly competition where one company is proudly advertising that they're, you know, cutting their energy consumption at a certain rate, and then maybe another company says, well, we're doing it even faster. And really, you know, building incentives to.
That's fascinating to me, just in regards to how that's often a nonprofit way of thinking, in a way that transparency. I think it shows you how his way of thinking, and even that Creative Commons that you mentioned earlier, it's kind of shifting over possibly to the corporate world. I think that's really fascinating stuff.
Yeah. And then the.
Go ahead.
If we're done with that one, there's one more Wikisim item I'd like to mention, which is the focus on the parser, which is my eyes are starting to cross even as I say it because it's so technical. I can't even. But I mean, there's been a lot of talk recently, a lot of talk forever, but especially recently about a visual editor, about finding ways to make Wikipedia much, much more intuitive to edit. And there was specifically, there's a group, Dirk Riele, I'm not sure if that's, is that how you say his name?
Yep, that's right.
And one of his PhD student, I believe it's Hannes, I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. But he presented, he's been doing some pretty deep research into exploring how Media Wiki's markup syntax works and exploring, you know, translating that into HTML, questioning whether HTML is really the right vehicle for it to be sort of the standard, or whether HTML should just be used to render things as opposed to sort of store the information. And it's, I wish I had the technical ability to really to really break this down, but I was very excited to see the amount of really deep focused energy going into that, because I think it's an incredibly sticky issue on a technical level, and only with a lot of focus from a lot more than just the Wikimedia Foundation, I think is there ever really going to be progress on it.
Right. Yeah. Last year, I think James, you were at the 2010 West Coast Mini Wiki Conference where Ward showed off some of the work that he was doing on parsing, and it looked like there had been some more breakthroughs in the last year. So we might be getting closer to the elusive, you know, kind of universal graphical editor for MediaWiki markup, because that's been kind of an intractable problem since like 2006, when there was a Google Summer of Code student who nearly lost his mind trying to spend 3 months to find a parser for MediaWiki, and he basically, at the end of the summer, said, I can't do it, and
I think no one can do it.
Yeah, so likely no one can do it. So
it's got to happen. Something's got to happen. I mean, it's again, from doing this this research I'm doing right now, it's overwhelming how many people say, yeah, this has got to happen, I think, to make...
Well, there's got to be a day.
We go back to to helping out new users. It makes sense.
Yeah. And there's got to be a day too where someone, you know, like if Wikipedia fails to grow in directions that make people want to edit it, you know, there's got to be a day where another project sort of overtakes its dominance in some way.
Well, you know, I mean, so this was interesting. Ward gave a talk, as you say, at the Wikipedia 10 Wiki conference about, you know, Wikipedia. Wikipedia is the same stuff, basically, as it was 10 years ago, certainly as it was 9 years ago in terms of the syntax. I mean, it, you know, there have been things added to it, but it's ultimately the same thing. In that time, we've had a few little things change in the web, like, you know, the creation of standardized concepts of content management systems that basically didn't exist in 2000, you know, and we've come so far, and yet Wikipedia is still basically a geek out, you know, handcrafted ASCII code that sort of, but not quite, validates as, you know, Turing complete. You know, it's fantastic, and as a technologist, I think it's really intriguing. But, you know, I edit, you know, WordPress blogs at work occasionally, and, you know, the level of editing experience is, you know, 1,000 miles far.
Oh, my stepmother can edit her WordPress, but she can't edit Wikipedia.
Oh, no, absolutely. And
she's not an idiot. She's a genius and savvy. What's that say about us?
And I'm a guy with, you know, what, you know, a master's of computer science and 9 years experience of using...
Bragging.
And I have difficulty.
There are times your eyes just cross when
Don't even put me around a table.
Just knowing how to do it isn't always enough to make it easy to do.
And I always say, I'm not tech savvy. And people are like, dude, you can edit Wikipedia. I'm like, oh, well, okay. That makes you feel better.
Exactly. And I had the easiest possible experience because I started when it was really simple and it's got more and more complex over time. So it's like as a kid, you learn the language in basic components and build up. You know, people entering now and trying to learn WikiTax is just insane.
Well, and the documentation is atrocious.
Yeah. Because, you know, why would we want to help
people how to non-wiki? Why would we have WikiSpeak for people who don't know how to edit Wikipedia? But I'm not going to fix that until I'm paid because it's too much to deal with.
That's right.
Oh, was that too obvious? I'm sorry.
It's above your pay grade. So, yes.
Volunteer.
Yes. Well, thanks for that wrap up of WikiSim. That was great. Yeah. And we definitely need to get more Americans there. That's, that's
yeah, it sounds like we're not really
not good
showing up.
Well, and can I chime in a really cool thing before we move on to the next subject real quick? Wiki Loves Monuments just wrapped up. It was for the month of September. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that takes place in Europe, or it took place in Europe this year. Really amazing stuff. And, you know, people go out into their communities. They photograph monuments, which represent actually buildings, unlike in the United States, or buildings in public art, I guess you could say. Unlike in the U.S., monuments are usually artwork. Go out into Europe, they photograph these amazing buildings, which are all listed on these historical databases, upload the photos, and they've uploaded, let me get my data out here, over 165,000 photos in September. And they beat the Guinness Book of World Records photo safari, I guess you could call it, which had 126,501 photos. So hopefully our friends over in Europe with the Wikimedia Netherlands, I think, headed it up, will be maybe receiving a Guinness Book of World Records whatever, crown. I don't know what you get, a medal for that. So I think that's really exciting.
A Barnstar. I think it's Barnstar.
We should make that. They'd be the first recipients of the Guinness Book of World Records Barnstar.
Absolutely. Or, you know, really hero of the wiki, maybe we should say.
Yeah, right. I think that'd be great. Wonderful advocates for commons and everything. And there's some really amazing photos online.
I flew out to the Netherlands to take part in Wiki Loves Monuments. And I have a slightly guilty secret here, which is that although I took about 500 photos, I then didn't get round to uploading them to anything. And by the time I managed to get them off the camera and onto my laptop, it was 2 hours into October, which meant that it was no longer valid for me to upload them. Well, but oh well.
I'm just going to say that I went to Brussels for 2 days after Haifa Wikimania, and I took a bunch of photos and I uploaded them within a week.
That's because you rock and I suck. But you know, it was amazing.
There you have it, folks.
It was incredibly organized. You know, so we reported to the Wikimedia Netherlands office, and I was handed, you know, maps with little icons on for the particular city we were going to, and there was an actual database printout of every single of the official monuments in the city. And you know, and we had to work out the best way to get around to go to each of them, and it had like specific detail, like which bit of the building was the thing that was you know up for photography. So for example, for some buildings the building was actually really new, it was 1700s, but the gate was from 1400s or something like that. And, you know, it's really impressive, and you know, amazing amount of work.
Ludwig and and Martin did a really amazing job heading up this project. And I keep saying every time I talk to Martin Dahmer's, I'm spacing out, Multichill, excuse me, I tell him I want to do this in the U.S. So hopefully someday, post-grad, I'll be able to do a Wiki Loves Something in the United States inspired by Caldari mixed with Multichill.
Why don't we do Wiki Loves Public Art? You're a public art geek.
I want to work on post-grad. Post-grad, I've only got how many things on my plate? Can you remember? So go team. Great job, Wiki Loves Monuments.
There must be a public art category in Wikipedia.
I only helped start Wiki Loves Wiki Public Art. What? Are you serious? Come on, dude. So Wiki Project Public Art?
I thought Wiki Projects were dead. But not
no, they're just pining for the fields.
No, you should go on Wiki Project Feminism and see how that's been going. Popping off. So, but no, I co-founded Wiki Project Public Art, but we can talk about that another time. So,
cool. I'm looking at it now. Nice.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Next topic, which is terms of use.
Yay. Yeah.
In theory, everyone knows that Wikipedia probably should have a terms of use.
Oh, we don't?
That when you use it, we should tell users, by the way, this is edited by a bunch of people you may not know, and you should use it wisely. But
that's what OTRS is for.
That's for complaining when you didn't tell them how to use it.
Exactly.
But apparently there's been a rise in interest in the terms of use, right, Pete?
Right. Yes. So it's, I mean, there has been terms of use for quite some time, but it's apparently it's basically just, it just covers the licensing aspects of how Wikipedia operates. It doesn't, there are many, many, components that, are sort of considered the professional standard of how big websites do things. There are many areas of law that are simply not covered in the Wikimedia Project's terms of use. And so Jeff Brigham, who's the staff counsel at the Wikimedia Foundation, who I believe joined the foundation roughly January or February, has made it a big project to do a rewrite of the terms of use. But because we are Wikimedia, we run these things by the community. And I think in this particular instance, it's really a very clear illustration of why it's valuable to do that, because Jeff, who I know somewhat through my work at the foundation, is clearly has great expertise in applicable areas of law and sort of knowing how things fit together. The strength that he brings is not as a Wikipedian. He has not been sitting around, screwing around with wiki syntax for 5 years, or 9 years, like some of us. not only that, but even if he had, he could not possibly have been doing it in 267 languages in all of the countries that, that exist and all the different projects that we have. So, while he has an understanding of the framework of why it's important to do these things, he really needs the input of people who can maybe see unforeseen consequences that wouldn't be clear and suggest different ways of phrasing things. So there's an active discussion going on. It's supposed to be a 30-day process. I believe it started September 8th. But Jeff has actually said there are so many points that have come up, and he thinks it's so valuable that it will probably go longer than October 8th. It's a page on Meta. It's just if you go to meta.wikimedia.org and type in terms of use, mm-hmm. you'll see the proposed new terms of use, and you can click on the discussion tab and jump right into what's been a very lively discussion. And at the top of that discussion page is actually, he really lays out the framework in two chunks. There's one that was sort of the original announcement, and then just like a week or so ago, he added a lot of detail as far as why it's important to redo it. And I think one point from that I'd really like to highlight, I think a lot of people look at something like this and think, wow, we're Wikimedia. We're different from a lot of other big websites. We don't want to be big and corporate and bureaucratic. We don't want to be suing our users. Why would we want to add all of this extra weight to our terms of use? And I think there are a number of reasons for that Jeff outlines pretty clearly in that second post. But one of them that I really want to highlight is that it's really about saving money, fundamentally. It's about using our volunteer-given resources in the most effective possible way, putting the smallest amount towards litigating disputes, mm-hmm. and the most of it towards programs and technology and the things that really make Wikipedia a better place and Wikimedia projects better. If you don't have clear terms of use spelled out, that means it's harder to settle things before taking them to court. That means more cases go to court. That means you spend a ton more money.
And we do, anyone who does OTRS, and of course our the folks who work at the legal team, they know it calls every day, emails every day. It's mm-hmm. you never know what could happen.
Well, at least this is something you can point to chapter and verse now,
yeah.
right? Which
yeah.
would be helpful in that sense.
It's great.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, some quick hits. We talked about Wiki Loves Monuments. QR codes. Sarah, you're our
Yes, QR codes are happening.
Those little boxy square 2D barcode things we've seen.
Yeah, here. Black and white thingamajiggies you see everywhere from advertisements at the bus stop to
FedEx packages.
Oh, my, yeah, FedEx packages have been using them for years. Really popular in Japan, kind of overflowed into the UK, specifically started with the folks over at the Dury Museum, Roger Bamkin, who's a Wikipedia in residence over there, and Terence Eden, who's a great mobile web consultant. Roger Bamkin's chair of the Wikimedia UK, as I read here on my blog post from the foundation. And they've been doing some really great stuff at incorporating the QR codes into museum exhibitions. So customers. Goodness gracious, too much about terms of service here. and I work, I'm a museum industry person,
Excellent. So
which is even worse. So museum visitors can go into the institution, scan a label with this QR code, and learn more about...
With their mobile phone.
With their mobile phone, thank you. And then QRpedia, this amazing app or a program or magical thing that they've created, because I'm not a techie... allows it processes the language that the phone is running on, and it shoots them to the appropriate Wikipedia article based on that language about that object. So a painting, a rock, a sculpture, a whatever. And
I think it's really exciting because it's not about the fact that it's us working with museums, which is great. It's not about taking Wikipedia almost for granted. It's kind of the institutional plumbing of the world. And of course we'd plug into it. You know, that's fantastic. And there's the validation thing, but actually what's exciting, I think most about it is that really we're focused on the smaller languages here. You know, if you go to a big museum like the British Museum, who is starting to look at taking it up, you know, they'll spend the money, do the translation for English, for Chinese, for Japanese, for, French and German and Russian. Great. But if you speak, Hungarian and your English is very poor, well, hey, guess what? This will actually help you out. And it's actually going to hopefully drive quite a lot of cultural work on the wikis that aren't the kind of English wiki. Because, English Wikipedia doesn't need, more plugging. What we want is to help, everything drive up.
What we need are people from those languages to be translating articles about those objects. So then it'll be great.
Absolutely.
So,
or writing articles about those
objects. And writing the articles. And Liam wrote a great blog post that I just mentioned a minute ago. We'll link to on the Wikimedia blog about the QR codes recently. There's a great photo of Jimmy Wales, who recently went to the Children's Museum of Indianapolis and met with Wikipedia in residence, Lori Bird Phillips, the first hired Wikipedian residence, might I add. And there's a great photo of him scanning the giant QR code that they have about their amazing historical carousel. And now the Juan Miró show that is in Barcelona, that is, I believe, moving to the Tate Museum in England, I believe.
Oh,
I don't
fantastic.
Know is going to be using the QR codes. And fingers crossed, hopefully they'll come to the United States and the Miro show will be using QR codes at the National Gallery here in D.C. So really exciting stuff with that. It's such a simple technology that has become this great way to allow the museum visitor to have some control and exploration on their own, which is very empowering for them. And it allows us to continue to meet our mission of empowering people with knowledge. Right. And it allows the museums to often... continue to broaden their mission by sharing knowledge of the world on a larger basis. So very exciting stuff going on with that.
And I believe one of the cooler parts of this effort is, I don't know whether it was a hack or just some kind of cool design trick that they had, like, the barcode that you have, or not the barcode, the QR code that you have in front of you, you can snap it, you can use a reader on your phone, but the depending on what language your phone is, it'll automatically pull up the right Wikipedia page in the right language and everything for you, right? So that's really
yeah, slick. So what yeah. happens is it takes you not to a particular Wikipedia article, mm-hmm. but to kind of the concept of the interwikis between all the different articles for the group of things that, you know, the person labeling the exhibit has decided is appropriate. So, you know, if this is like a Roman spear, yeah, there probably won't be an article about that particular Roman spear unless it was used to stab someone very famous. But there will be articles about the concept of Roman spears, or maybe just about the concept of, you know, prehistory spheres.
Well, the image of Jimmy scanning the QR code at the museum, that goes to that actual carousel. The Bradipal Carousel is one of the oldest ones still in existence in the United States, and there's a featured article about it that, you know, Lori helped develop with her Museum Apprentice Program at the Children's Museum. That's a whole other thing we can talk about another time when Lori's here. And it's a featured article that's phenomenal about a carousel. And but then again, like James just said, if you scan a pile of rocks, it might go to a collection of rocks that the curator helped develop with some Wikipedians, you know, an article about. So it's pretty exciting stuff. And it's affordable. As museums,
you just said pile of rocks and exciting stuff.
Yeah, I'm a museum geek.
Diamonds
and I love
are kinds of rocks, you know.
I used to smash rocks in my backyard hoping they were geodes when I was a kid, and they were never geodes. So anyway, what else do we have here?
Let's see.
Language
oh, you
scripts.
Know, that's another lovely segue, actually.
Yes. Oh, geodes?
So
my sad childhood?
No, just but the QR codes being something that loops in a lot of smaller language version Wikipedias leads into the foundation hired a team. I believe this was announced at Wikimania, so they're hard at work right now exploring the issues around various kinds of scripts, various languages that do not function well in MediaWiki or in many cases just generally on the internet due to the way that Unicode treats language scripts on the internet. So there's some pretty fundamental problems that make it difficult, I think, both to readers and to editors in a large number of languages. I think there's especially a lot of the languages spoken in India and Indonesia and South Asia. And this has been a known problem for a long time, but for the first time, the foundation has really, made a commitment by bringing in a team to really explore that issue and see what can be done about it. So I know Gerard Mason, who's been a very prolific blogger on this topic as a volunteer for many years, is one of that team and has continued blogging pretty extensively. You can find his reports on that on the Planet Wikimedia blog. So
he was hired.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
awkward silence. Yep. Awkward silence.
And then there was an internal. There was another hire that I think is worth noting. Pretty recently, I don't know the exact. This may have been even before Wikimania, but I think it's a pretty significant one. Is Tillman Beyer.
Yeah.
I believe that's how you say his name. User HAEB Haib. Who was previously the Wikipedia signpost editor, but he's been brought in to the foundation. I believe his title is internal communications. I don't know. Help me out here. He's running internal communications, which I think anybody who's interacted with the foundation probably has some perception of how challenging it can be, both for anyone trying to follow all of the interesting projects that are underway at the Wikimedia Foundation, and also for anyone who works at the Wikimedia Foundation to keep track of all of the things going on in our ever-growing world. While we've had people focused on media relations and external communications for some time, this is the first time that there's really a dedicated effort to have someone making sure that the Wikimedia Foundation monthly reports those have been coming out for a long time, but now we're starting to see them come out sooner after they have their meetings, and with a lot more detail. The most recent report that I saw was probably two or three times as long as the ones that I've seen in the past. And you know, if you're trying to keep track of a project that you're trying to, you know, coordinate with as a volunteer or as a chapter at the foundation, it's going to be so much better just to know that there is a consistent resource where you can go and actually have a good chance of finding useful information.
Mm. Can I make a couple other quick little small things here, and we can wrap up in a minute here. Mm-hmm. On the GLAM front, because I do some outreach for GLAM, Wikimedia Israel has introduced a GLAM project now, which is really, really great. And Yael Talmor is going to be serving as Wikipedia in residence there at the Israel Museum in Jerusalem. And one of the more, at least within the community, we've been talking a lot about copyright and the Dead Sea Scrolls, which have recently been digitized with help of Google. And so I don't want to get too into it right now, but there's been some really interesting discussions about copyright and the opportunity within the GLAM community to kind of develop a declaration of sorts with various GLAMs around the world to kind of say, here's what we're trying to do. Here's what we're going to release and do with the world when it comes to education and knowledge and image and content. And
I think and here
knowledge.
Are what we regard as like the ethical concerns that surround that.
Right? Yeah, I mean, how do you copyright the Dead Sea Scrolls? You know, this all kind of goes back to
the whole national holder. Yeah, right.
National Portrait Gallery, you know, spiel from London a few years ago. So that's been an interesting little thing on our radar also, that I think some great things will come out of in regards to policy and ideas in the GLAM community. So
right. Well, we definitely need more podcasts, episodes about the culture overlaps in terms of volunteerism with GLAM, but also the culture clashes, which is, you know, where historical societies and museums are used to physically controlling stuff. Even if they're out of copyright, they're used to physically controlling it and making money off of it. And how does something like Wikipedia, where we really believe in the free culture side, you know, interact with those folks in a nice way, not a scary way, right?
No, it's tough. I mean, I work with the Smithsonian Institution, which, you know, charges for selected images, not for the copyright or for the privilege to use the image, but just to have a copy of it so you can research it at home.
Right.
You know, we charge you $50, let's say, as an example, in some of the units. But as I've come to find out, as a feisty Wikipedian who loves copyright and loves to talk about it and wants everything to be free, it pays for half a position.
Mm-hmm.
And as a person who's studying university, you know, for GLAM, that, you know, kind of go, oh, okay, I get it now.
Right.
So there's a lot of interesting
and
things.
And I think
that
you see that in so many different kinds of institutions too. I mean, government agencies, you know, like a few years ago, the Oregon legislature asserted copyright over the laws of the state of Oregon. It turned out they rescinded that, you know, that it came out well, but it's, you know, as it turned out, that was driven by the fact that the Oregon Legislative Council office, you know, with its staff of, I don't know, 20 or 25 people, was funded by the way the statute was written in 1954 by their ability to sell printed copies of it. Mm-hmm. So that was their, like, that office could not exist unless there's a transformation in the way it's funded. You know, so I think you see it in so many different kinds of institutions where it's not necessarily a greed thing, but it's a matter of just being able to continue to function the way that they're used to functioning.
Well, I think it's going to be really exciting to see what takes place in the next few months of that, especially if a GLAM camp's going to be taking place in the Netherlands during the second or first week, I believe, of December. I had a note here, but it's disappeared. And that'll be really great for folks who are interested in GLAM in Europe and the United States and beyond, who can get over there. And just to a little another touch base of GLAM, we've got some great stuff at the Smithsonian. We've got image donation going on right now with public domain works of art from the Archives of American Art. We're developing some programs with the Library of Congress. Other great Smithsonian work will be there in the spring with Smithsonian libraries, free more content, hopefully. So at least in D.C., we've got some great stuff going on with regards to that. And, of course, congratulations to Wikimedia D.C. For being recognized as a chapter. And speaking of chapters, isn't that something here on our list I see? chapter and foundation strategies.
Oh, wait, James is gone.
We lost James. No.
Oh, no.
Well, that's foiled because I can't help you on that.
Darn. We had the perfect segue and we...
Oh, man. Well, okay.
Did we just censor that issue? I think we may have just censored something.
James, are you back?
I am, yeah, sorry.
We just segued into chapters and then there was crickets. So.
Well, what can I say? You know, clearly the Wi-Fi doesn't want me talking about this, but you know, I will not be stopped from telling you the good news, which is that as happens roughly this time each year, in the run-up to the fundraiser, which is like 2-3 weeks now, there's a lot of work that's gone on by the chapters and the foundation into their kind of strategies for the next year and what they want to spend their money on and, you know, where they propose their budget will be. And, you know, this is where, you know, these are published on Meta in general and they're, you know, open for discussion, open for debate. And this is where people decide that they're going to spend money. This is where they decide, hey, we're going to spend $80,000 on the tool server and add in some more storage or not. You know, this is something where actually you can really make a difference. And, you know, if there's something that you think desperately is crying out for, you know, for funding or maybe not for money particularly, but for attention, maybe there should be, you know, some support for a community staff member or, you know, whatever it is, you know, get involved. Because if you don't speak up now, no one's going to.
All right.
All right, chapters.
Any other chapters?
That's probably all there is to say about chapters, right? I think we've now covered that.
Never. I think there's always a lot of things to say about chapters, but I think that's the most...
Yeah, but that's not.
All right. Well, that's a big roundup for, what, a month past?
Yeah, I think we went...
Wikimedia.
We need to do these more often. We don't have to put these people through 2 hours of us talking, so...
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
It's getting to the point we might need to do it daily.
So that means we need to fly James over to California every month, right?
I'm not against that.
That's well, I'll meet you out there at the end of the month.
Same schedule as us, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's 3 a.m. almost. Oh, it's 2 a.m. almost 2 a.m. where I'm at. Gosh, so hey.
Wow. Okay, right. So let's
go. That's normal work time for you, Sarah.
It is true. I'm still working. It's the life of a consultant. So, well, wonderful talk today. Really, so much to talk about. So.
Yes. So we'll see you next time on Wikipedia Weekly, monthly, bi-monthly, and. Send us some feedback. Oh, you can go to wikipediaweekly.org for this, for leaving any comments on the podcast. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.